seriously popular.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Life is full of what ifs. Some awesome, like what if AI could fold your laundry? And some, well, less awesome, like what if you have unexpected medical costs? UnitedHealthcare can help get you covered with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. They supplement your primary plan to help you manage out-of-pocket costs. No deductibles, no enrollment periods, and especially no more what-ifs. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
In today's episode...
Is Eric Ten Hag deluded?
What's the worst miss of all time?
And do we really care who referees support? I'm Ian Ladyman.
I'm Chris Sutton.
And it's all kicking off.
Chris, Eric Ten Hag thinks United could have won that derby. Is he deluded?
Yes, he is. Eric Ten Hag is deluded. What a way to start.
Yes.
He is. I think Manchester United have done a full circle under Eric Ten Hag. I think it was his first Manchester derby, the 6-3 game.
When Haaland and Foden both got hat-tricks, I believe.
I think it was. And I do the BBC predictions. And on that particular day, I think I predicted a cricket score. I went for a cricket score again yesterday for a reason that Manchester City are so far ahead of Manchester United. And the biggest concern, and I get why managers have to come out and put a positive spin on things, but having said all that, listening to Eric Ten Hag use phrases like "we are progressing," that was a good performance. If I was a Manchester United fan, I would really be questioning what the manager is saying and the way that the team are playing. And the truth is I don't think anybody sees a future for Eric Ten Hag beyond this season.
I thought it was okay for them to play the way they played. Because I think there's a realisation at Manchester United that if they go toe-to-toe with top teams, the very top teams, they will be turned over quite quickly.
That's pretty sad, isn't it?
It is a bit sad, but as a coach, you have to be realistic, you have to be pragmatic. I didn't think there was any problem with the way that they set up. In terms of Eric Ten Hag and his future, I think the problem are some of the statistics. A goal difference of -2, the same number of goals scored in the Premier League.
Is that right, -2? Yeah. I didn't know that.
Yeah, they're not the only team in the top half with minus goal difference, but even though they are Manchester United, -2 goal difference, same amount of goals scored as Luton. They've lost 16 of their 38 games in all competitions, and they are, I think it's only a point in it, but they are almost as close to Nottingham Forest in 17th as they are to Liverpool in first. I think those are the statistics that damn Eric Ten Hag. But I do wonder whether any manager could do particularly well with that squad.
How long do you wonder about that for? So you think Pep Guardiola wouldn't do a better job with that squad? Of course he would. Would Jurgen Klopp get more out of that squad? Of course he would. But what we're quick to forget, and we are sort of regurging some of this from before. And I said this before because I actually don't think he should be in the job. And I said that earlier on. I've got nothing against Eric Ten Hag. But you have to think about, where did Manchester United finish last season? And where are they this season? And have there been any signs of progression? Tell me one player who Eric Ten Hag has really improved, or tell me one great improvement which there has been at Manchester United this season. I think you're going to struggle.
I think I probably would struggle. Let me ask you a question that's just popped into my head. You mentioned Pep Guardiola. So does Pep Guardiola or Jurgen Klopp,
Ange Postecoglou,
does he get that Manchester United team into the top three? Does he get them into the top four?
Yeah, I mean it's hypothetical. I mean, I'm sort of half contradicting myself by saying that, you know, they would get more of a tune out of this Manchester United team. But I think that they would have a better understanding of what is required at Manchester United. And you talked about, and quite rightly so, the way that Manchester United had to set up yesterday. I think if you were two seasons into a Pep Guardiola reign or a Jurgen Klopp reign or an Ange Postecoglou reign, you would see Manchester United playing in a completely different style to what Eric Ten Hag has been doing.
Jim Ratcliffe and his Ineos group have said on the record that they expect United to be back near the top in 3 years. To me, that actually still looks like a stretch at the moment, I must say. Now, one player who the spotlight was very much on yesterday was Marcus Rashford. A lot of that was to do with himself because of what he'd said on the Players' Tribune website last week. He'd written a long essay, or somebody may have written it for him.
What are you suggesting there?
They were his sentiments, even if he didn't write it himself. Yeah. Maybe he did, but I doubt it. They were his sentiments, and talked about people shouldn't doubt his commitment to Manchester United. It was a long and passionate essay. I thought the timing of it was questionable, given that his form has been poor.
I agree.
It was 2 days before Manchester Derby. So he smashes one into the net after 8 minutes, 25 yards, one of the best goals we've seen this season. And people immediately say, on commentary and on social media, oh, he's proved his doubters wrong.
Mm. Yeah. Well, he certainly didn't. People would, you know, would view that goal. I get that. I get why, you know, Gary Neville would say that in commentary. But you have to look at the whole game. And, you know, certainly you look at his level of performance. His goal was brilliant. You can't get away from that. And, you know, credit to him for the strike. We know he's capable of that. But is he, you know... Is he at the levels which he has been previously? That's the best way to judge him. So, you know, he can come out and defend himself for his actions. I don't really know, in truth, read your article, I thought it was a good article. I don't know where he was really going with that, you know, saying he was a Manchester United supporter. Well, you know, that's all well and good. But people judge you by what you do on the football field. And actions speak louder than words. And this season... he hasn't really let his football do the talking, and last season he did, and that's how we judge him.
There's a very good piece running on and made online and across all our digital platforms this morning by our Manchester United correspondent Chris Wheeler, with the headline saying, "Knowing how brilliant he can be only makes the mediocrity all the more unfathomable," talking about Marcus Rashford. And I think that really is the nub of it. Rather than proving doubters wrong yesterday, I think what we saw from Marcus was actually an embodiment of the current problem, i.e. a flash of absolute brilliance and then quite a lot of nothingness. Now, he wasn't the only Manchester United player to be in that bracket. It's a defensive performance. Eric Ten Hag had the team set up essentially to defend with 10 behind the ball across the width of the 18-yard box to essentially stop City playing through the middle to try and force them round the side, and it worked for a while. Now, in that formation, Marcus Rashford or any other forward player is hardly going to have the game of his life, is he? However, there were a couple of moments when he looked like he got away, and on both occasions, Kyle Walker, the Manchester City fullback, gobbled him up. But I think that was it with Rashford. It's what Manchester United don't want from him is a moment of genius and then an hour of nothing. They need consistent performance, and that is what they don't really get from him at the moment. Now, you've seen, I was at the game yesterday. It was I love Manchester derbies. I was saying this to somebody.
Do you love all derbies or just Manchester derbies?
Well, it's interesting. So I was saying this to somebody last night. I was messaging them when I was waiting for my train.
What about the Old Farm?
I've never been to the Old Farm. Norwich and Ipswich.
Big derby. Were you loving it?
Because that would have bamboozled me up until about 2 months ago when you said it previously on this podcast, and it bamboozled.
It's bamboozling you now, yeah.
Bamboozled me. Mm. And you explained it to me, the Old Farm derby, Norwich and Ipswich. But I've never actually been to an Old Firm, which is ridiculous. But I love the Manchester derby, and it did make me wonder last night whether other derbies, I think the North London derby carries that glamour. I think the Old Firm derby carries that glamour. But to me, there's something. It always feels even better than a Merseyside derby, the Manchester
not
one.
It
might
really.
Be because I live there.
Not now. It's derby in name, but not in nature. We know who's going to win.
I love
it's
it.
Not,
I love
yeah,
it.
Yeah. Well, I think you love it, but it's not. You know, it's like F1.
No, it's not because it's a sport.
It's but it is like F1. Everybody knows that Max Verstappen is going to, win the championship this season. Everybody knows that Manchester City, every time they play Manchester United, they'll beat them.
But at least a football game is 11 against 11, where F1 isn't a fair fight from the start because you've either got the best car, you haven't.
You don't have to explain the difference between football and F1.
It's like sending F1's like sending John McEnroe onto the centre court at Wimbledon with a tennis racket that's twice as big as the one that Bjorn Borg's holding. That is what F1 is like, I'm afraid. Football at least is a fair fight. And what I like about the Manchester derby is I haven't got a dog in the fight because don't support either team. So I just love watching it. Anyway, great atmosphere, great occasion.
But you knew what was going to happen. So when you know what's going to happen, is that
didn't know what was going to happen.
Event? Yes, you did. Everybody knew it. Chris, what was your prediction?
3-1.
Yeah, you knew it.
It was 1-1 with 10 minutes to go. Okay. Come on. It was 1-1 with 10 minutes to go.
Know, I know everybody does this, but if it was a boxing match.
No, it wasn't like that. No, it wasn't a pun thing. It wasn't like that. Possession wise, it was. In terms of
27 shots to 2, that's not a pummeling. What was the possession stats? 70 odd, whatever. 70 plus for Manchester City. It wasn't a pummeling.
What game
are you watching? You like Eric Ten Hag?
I was there. You weren't. You in Scotland. Okay.
Right, okay. Scotland have television?
You in Scotland watching Brendan Rodgers see life go down the gurgle again. I was there. It wasn't quite a plumbing. Now, there were two magnificent goals, Rashford, Phil Foden. It's hard to call it. I'm going to ask you. Which was the best goal?
They were both really
good.
Yeah,
we know that.
Why do we have to do this?
Because we're going to do a Spotify poll.
Right, okay.
So we're going to ask the listeners.
So we're going to have Rashford, Foden, both.
We're going to have Rashford and Foden. And I think that it's Rashford. Rashford was like a thundercrack. You could hear it all around Manchester. It was out of nothing. It was like a pistol shot. It was absolutely magnificent. So I'm going for Marcus Rashford. And you're going to sit on the fence, which is fine.
No, I will say, for the actual moment and the surprise element, Manchester United
scoring
actually scoring. I would say Rashford.
Okay, now, so on Spotify, when you've listened to this episode, go to Spotify, go to the show notes, and beneath this, the poll will be there. Which was the best goal in the Manchester derby? Phil Foden.
Can we do which is the best team as well?
Phil Foden, Marcus Rashford, or, you know, there were two other goals, so I suppose we'd better put other there as well. Phil Foden, Marcus Rashford, and let us know what you think. We have had a poll running for the last week on Spotify. We asked you last week who you thought would go down if we presume that Sheffield United and Burnley are already doomed. Sheffield United at home to Arsenal.
Who did you vote for? Everton?
Tonight, of course. So we had Forest, Luton and Everton
Who did you vote for? Everton? Are you sticking with your Everton prediction?
I didn't vote. And the outcome of that poll is interesting. It's a tie. Forest and Luton, 39% of the vote each. I must admit, having watched that entertaining Luton Villa game on the television on Saturday, I still think it will be Luton. I think it feels a little bit as though they're They got to the top of that hill when they looked like they started to beat teams and really threaten teams, and I think they're over the crest.
Do you think they're too
now.
Expansive now, Luton?
I don't think they're too expansive, no. I just think they've fallen the wrong side of some very tight margins, and with the games that they've got away from home, which we've talked about before, pretty much they've got to go to all of the big clubs away from home. I think their moment has passed. And it's a shame, because I can't remember last time I watched Luton and wasn't entertained. It's always really entertaining. You're looking at me as if you think they are too expansive.
No, I just think they're doing it a different way to what they did at the start of the season, where I think that Rob Edwards was more defensively minded. I think that, you know, they are a bit more open. I think they're, you know, if you look at, I've not got the stats in front of me, but just on the eye, the way they play, they carry a goal threat.
They
also, you know, seem to be leaving themselves, you know, vulnerable at the back. And I think that's an issue. And one week, we do need to discuss on here how totally useless Sheffield United and Burnley have been this season. Because people gave Norwich City a kicking the last two times they were in the Premier League. But, I mean, they aren't competing.
No.
Sheffield United and Burnley.
And Burnley in particular seem to be just fading away.
Hearing Vincent Kompany, we still believe. We certainly need points to back that up.
He's made a couple of strange decisions, Kompany. I think one of them is undoubtedly around the goalkeeper, James Trafford, who we know can be a great shot-stopping goalkeeper, but has looked ill-equipped to deal physically with the Premier League. That's not to say that he won't be able to in years going. David De Gea couldn't deal with
learning curve, isn't it?
David De Gea couldn't deal with it when he first turned up, and look what happened to him. So I'm not saying that this is the end of James Trafford, but I'm surprised that Kompany hasn't done anything about that, because you can't stay in the, you can't hope to stay in the Premier League without a fit for purpose goalkeeper, can you? It's one of the.
He's not the only one. He had this vision, and I quite liked his vision, and it's okay if they're going to get relegated. I mean, it's not if, it's when. And you know, he put together a team of young talented players, but a development team. So you have this long term vision. It's okay if they get relegated, and all the squad, all this young, supposedly talented squads stay together, and they grow stronger because of their because of what they've learnt this season from the Premier League. They go down, they walk the Championship, they come back up, and they benefit from the last two seasons. But we know the way football works. There's probably half the Burnley team at the end of the season who thinks, "Well, we're going to go down. I want out.
I want away."
And that's the issue.
I'll say a couple of things about this, because I've probably said before on this podcast, my dad's a Burnley fan. I was talking to him about it at the week. I was talking to him about it at the weekend. First things I'd say is, what is that phrase about the definition of madness, which is doing the same thing over and over again and expecting a different outcome? That is a bit of that about Burnley, the way they try and play out from the back and get caught. But the other thing, this is what I was saying to my dad, was if you are Burnley now, you've got a choice. You either chase yourself, this is the way we want to go, and therefore this is the way we play, and this is the way that Vincent wants us to play. So we either, because they are going to go down, so we either let him take us down and ask him to bring us back up playing the same way, and hope that the players that we've got will get better at playing that way, and we might add a couple who will improve us. And the next time we come up, we'll be a good Premier League team playing that way. The option is to tear it up and say, well, hang on a minute, Luton haven't done it this way. Luton have been a bit more robust. They've been a bit more kind of aggressive and high pace and high energy.
They look like they're going to score.
So that's the balancing act, though, isn't it? And that's the long term against the short term.
So there's only one choice then, really, isn't there?
I don't know. What is there?
Well,
what?
You've got to stick with it.
But do
the supporters stick with it?
There have been complaints. I've noticed there have been, especially they lost heavily at Palace, didn't they? Lost at home to Bournemouth yesterday. I've noticed there have, from people who I follow on social media, who I see as being quite sensible Burnley fans, there have been
a few games.
A few moans and groans.
You know, in all your mob were piling on Norwich, the last couple of seasons. So, you know, I just want you to be a bit balanced, a bit fair.
Hold that thought. We'll be back right after this.
Life is full of what-ifs. Some awesome, like what if AI could fold your laundry? And some, well, less awesome, like what if you have unexpected medical costs? UnitedHealthcare can help get you covered with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. They supplement your primary plan to help you manage out-of-pocket costs. No deductibles, no enrollment periods, and especially no more what-ifs. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Right, what about the Haaland miss, the Erling Haaland miss? Gary Lineker said it was the worst he'd ever seen. It was one of those moments where even in the press box, you just go, oh!
Yeah.
Because you just can't believe it's happened.
That, yeah. Because it was Haaland, I mean, that was...
Why didn't everybody just head it?
Why didn't he just head it? Why didn't he? I mean, he could have chested it in, but you know, bundled it in with his belly.
Yeah.
Could have done absolutely anything. So for him to decide to volley, that was the only way he could possibly miss. You can't miss with a header from that range.
When you look at what he actually tried to do, which was a kind of a side foot volley, a ball that was about 2.5 feet off the ground. Mm. It was actually never going to go in. It was almost impossible to get over it from that with that technique.
I think we've seen him. He can get his leg up, get his leg up pretty high. He's quite flexible, isn't he?
Anyway, it's.
I don't think that we can have opinions on most things, but I don't think we should possibly be sort of digging.
I mean, I would have
for his finishing technique.
I would have to have jumped to head it.
Yeah, it would have gone over your head, wouldn't it?
Right, I think this is a perfect opportunity to play a little bit of five-a-side.
Are you ready to rank off? It's time for five-a-side.
Today, we are going to talk about our favourite misses. It sounds a bit as if we're revelling in footballers' misfortune, but it's your turn. So I asked you last night to come up with the five most memorable misses of your lifetime.
Oh, and do you know what? I thought I was going to struggle at this at first, but then there were so many personal ones, but I'm not going to be in my top five. So my top five all-time, can I say favourite misses?
Absolutely.
Or the best misses. And I will go from five to one.
So ascending
order. Okay, at number five, Steve Stone for Nottingham Forest against Reading. Kevin Campbell goes through and Steve Stone is alongside him. The ball is squared from Kevin Campbell. Steve Stone's probably 8 yards out. There's no goalkeeper in the goal. And he shanks it wide. I mean, you've got to see it to believe it. That's at number five.
I'll just interject to say I was there. I was there. It was a Friday night game. I was covering that game for Nottingham Evening Post. I still remember the look of astonishment on Steve Stone's face as he turned round and walked back to take up his position.
So at four, Van Vossen, the Rangers player, big derby game, Old Firm derby, and George Alberts goes through. Similar situation, virtually a carbon copy of the Steve Stone miss, does exactly the same. George Albert squares the ball. He has the goal gaping. He just has to pass it in. And he shanks it over the bar. What humiliation.
You can't shank it over the bar. No, a shank is a golf shot. Well, a shank goes sideways. You can't shank it over the bar.
Sclaffed it. Ballooned it.
Spooned it.
I mean, it was impossible. There's no pace on the ball. It's just sitting there.
Scooped it.
Just pass it in. Scoop, sclaff, shank.
Pooped it.
Pooped it.
Pooped it over.
Yeah.
Did it bobble? That's what you always say.
I don't think it bobbled.
Okay.
At three, Fernando Torres for Chelsea against Manchester United. Little step over, 1v1, step over, goes around the goalkeeper. Ball's not really running away from him. And guess what? Was he 6 yards out? How did he shank that?
Pooped it.
Wide.
Pooped it wide.
That was pretty incredible. And I'm going to say Haaland. At two.
Oh, you put him in there?
Yes, I've got Haaland at two just because he scored 500 goals last season. We're not used to him missing an opportunity like that. He could have bundled it in, bellied it in, chested it in, headed it in, took the wrong option. I mean, he was so close. He shouldn't miss that. That was an awful miss. But at number one, my favourite all-timer, Ronnie Rosenthal.
Good old Ronnie.
It's a long punt from David James in behind the Aston Villa defence. Ronnie Rosenthal's playing for Liverpool. Sean Teal misses it. Ronnie Rosenthal strolls round the goalkeeper, takes a touch just to settle himself before he can roll it into the empty net and hammers the ball. 7 yards off the underside of the bar. It's incredible.
He had the wildest hair in football, Ronnie Rosenthal. It was an incredible miss. But I wonder now, and I'm just going to ask you this, do you think he's glad it happened?
No.
Why?
No.
Because you'll remembered forever.
Yeah.
Aren't you? And let's face it, Ronnie Rosenthal probably wouldn't be remembered forever. Were it not
that's
it
not how you want. That's not how you want.
I reckon there's a little bit of him might be like, Now, good list, I have to say, good list. I would encourage people to go straight to YouTube and type all those in and watch them, because there's nothing like a sporting humiliation, is there? It's like watching a golfer miss from a foot, or a batsman, golden duck in cricket or something, or one of those serves at Wimbledon that goes completely wrong and flies head height and doesn't touch the ground and smashes into the wall at the back of the court. Bit of sporting madness. I've just remembered one while I was sitting here, and I wish I'd remembered it before the show because I could have Googled it. There's a Dalglish one at Old Trafford. I've just remembered
it. Yes, Alan Hansen.
Alan Hansen goes through as was his one. Alan Hansen probably could have played in any position on the field. And he glided through. There was some kind of, it was a bit like a Postecoglou offside trap. And Hansen just runs right through it with a bit of a chip and chase. Bears down and goal. One of those kind of 1970s stroke early 1980s awful pitches. Looks like it's looked like there's been a herd of cattle on it for the previous week. Squares it to Dalglish, who is literally on the 6 yard line at the Stretford end, and puts it in the Stretford end. You can imagine how that one was greeted.
That wouldn't be in my top five.
Because I'm going to mention two that are penalties.
Right. One of them I'm going to guess it would be. Were you going to go for the Arsenal?
Lineker started this by saying it's the worst miss ever, so I'm going to throw him right into the middle of it. Lineker at Wembley, playing for England, 1992, friendly against Brazil. He's got a penalty to tie to Bobby Charlton's record as leading England goalscorer, and tries Epenenka, which the Brazilian goalkeeper absolutely gobbles up, and Lineker...
Had he scored it, it'd be genius. Just bloody boot it, just put your foot through it.
Yeah, but he didn't.
No, but that's what you think. That's...
Yeah, but he didn't score. So Lineker never scored an England goal again. So that was his opportunity, and he blew it by, let's face it, trying to be a bit of a smart ass.
Do you think he still thinks about that?
I was going to say something. I'm not going to say it.
It's not like you.
What I was going to say I will say it. I don't think Gary Lineker's a stranger to thinking about himself. So, yeah, he probably does. He probably does occasionally think about that. Now, the other one, another penalty, it is the one at Highbury 2005 when Thierry Henry and Robert...
Did they have that song then?
What about the weather? or the ABBA one. And the song about the weather, I don't think so. That I think were Henry and Jobless Ben even born?
Probably toddlers. Right.
2005, they try to do the penalty where Perez tries to just touch it forward. Henry runs in behind him to slot it, just like Cruyff and Jesper Olsen did brilliantly for Ajax in 1982, apart from the fact they completely fluff it up. Perez barely touches the ball, which means that Henry overruns it. Danny Mills, who was playing for City, who were the opponents at the time,
good Norwich boy,
apoplectic, thinks it was disrespectful, gets into Henry's face. just shows if you're going to be a smart ass, and you should learn from this, if you're going to be a smart ass, make sure you pull it off. Anyway, there you go. There's our five aside for this week. Some interesting choices there. Chris's five worst misses in the history of football. Let us know what you think of those. I'm sure you've got your own to add. You can leave your thoughts in the show notes on Spotify, or in the review section on Apple Podcasts. You can do it on our social platforms, Twitter, or X as we call it these days, TikTok, Instagram, go to @MailSport. All our platforms are there. The MailSport TikTok account, by the way, has almost 1 million followers now. And make sure you check that out, because there are some brilliant...
I often check out all TikTok platforms.
I'm not sure TikTok and you are natural bedfellows, Chris, but seriously, have a look at it. There's some stuff there worth looking at. And also, while you are at it, while you go to Spotify, Apple Podcasts to leave your thoughts and your comments and your top five worst misses, make sure you subscribe while you are there. And also let us know where you are listening from. We're fascinated by the kind of breadth...
Bermuda.
The breadth that this podcast is proving to have. For example, last week, Hakim on Spotify let us know that he's listening from Malaysia. Bohemian Green, who we'll get back to in a minute, is listening from Prague. While Herbie let us know on WhatsApp that he's been listening from Kenya. And he's got a message for you, as Herbie, Chris. Lay off the Northerners. Too many cheap Northern gags, according to Herbie.
Was that Herbie, or did you write that in?
Well, you know, it's Herbie and I singing from the same hymn sheet there. Staying in the north, Liverpool. Bit of a scrappy late win at Forest on Saturday. Bit of controversy. We'll get to that. Mm-hmm. Can Liverpool keep this up?
Yes.
Can they?
Yes.
Can they really?
Absolutely. Because they're now at the weekend bringing Darwin on. Szoboszlai back. They're getting the big guns back. This is an incredible story. It's an incredible season. You know, we talk about Manchester United and the negativity there. Klopp is getting, you know, chucking kids in. Some of us, you know, you're a journalist, but I hadn't heard of some of these kids who have, you know, come into the Liverpool first team, and they're buying into it, and they are performing, and they are finding a way. And I think everybody at Liverpool is caught up in the emotion, and they are riding on that wave, and you know, long may it continue. And the weekend just about, you know, I think it perfectly summed up their season in many respects. But that belief within the squad, and while you know at the start of the season, I predicted Manchester City would win the Premier League. I do think what Liverpool have going for them at this moment in time, just that real doggedness to get over the line, which in whichever way they can, whoever they use, that's enormous.
Yeah, it's a fair point. My doubt, and I don't want to go dig too deep into this one, I wonder whether they can win it with a reserve goalkeeper. And that's no... Well, maybe that is disrespectful to Callagher. Because he's doing brilliantly.
I know what you're saying.
He's doing brilliantly. Great save from Alanga, 1-1 on Saturday.
He's good.
But he's goalkeepers good. Win your titles, Alisson.
But he is... I always think that, and we've had the debate about the FA Cup. But he doesn't... I don't want to Jonah him. But he doesn't do anything wrong.
No, he's doing brilliantly. Let's not jinx the lad, but I do wonder. Now, what I will say is they can't win four, right? They can't win four.
Miserable Northerner.
They can't win four. So what? They just can't win four.
They get all these...
What? Nothing.
Jurgen Klopp gets all these sort of motivational guys in and what. Do you think they'd ever invite you? You can't win four. You can't. You just can't.
You imagine having a motivational speech. I had to give myself a motivational speech to get out of bed this morning at 6 o'clock. Seriously.
But imagine if, on a serious point, right? Imagine if they had your mindset. They can win four.
Can I ask you a question?
Yeah.
Do you ever spring out of bed?
I don't think I've ever sprung.
What, even anywhere. When you were like, you must have done, when you were 20 and you were playing for Norwich and it was match day, you must have woke up and thought, right, let's get at
it. Used to wake up and put my kit on,
So you used to go to bed in your kit.
straight to the ground. Yeah. Just a cycle to the stadium.
I never spring out of bed. I just can't.
You're not a springy type of bloke.
It's just not me. Yeah, and maybe that's one to look at on another episode. Ian Lederman is motivational speaker.
But I don't know why you can't think like that as a player. And what's happening? No. What's happening at this moment in time? And Klopp's approach is just attack the game, attack the game, and it's working for them. So someone like you, we would just kick you straight out of the dressing room.
I would not have been good in the dressing room. Too mentally weak. Listen,
you'd have had to have football ability.
I think they've got to not toss off the Europa League, but I think they've got to deprioritise the Europa League. I really do. Look at this week, for example.
What's the difference between tossing off and deprioritising?
Good question. This is a team, this is a club that's been in three Champions League finals under Klopp, right? Europa League means nothing to Liverpool. It means nothing to him when you in the context of what they've achieved in the recent years, right? Look at this week, okay? City play in the Champions League on Wednesday at home to Copenhagen, okay? They're 3-1 up in that game, which will enable them to, I would imagine, rotate, rest a couple of players before playing Liverpool at Anfield next Sunday, okay? Liverpool are in Prague on Thursday night in the Europa League. He has got to rest players for that game. And if that means that they exit the Europa League, it doesn't mean that they will, but if they did, then it's a price worth paying. That's what I'm saying. He cannot go full metal on Thursday night in Prague ahead of Sunday against City. Now, they were helped. How much were they helped by referee Paul Tierney at the City Ground on Saturday? Let's do this quickly.
Weren't really helped by Paul Tierney.
They were.
I'm sick and tired of this whole debate and Nottingham Forest and the blame game. How many minutes after the whole incident? It was 1:52. It's nearly 2 minutes, right? So while the whole sort of attack on Paul Tierney, I think he left himself open to that, and I'm not disputing any of that. But the owner coming on the pitch and you know, some of the Forest coaches getting involved and the anger. I hope they showed the same type of anger. I think it was to Hudson-Odoi who could have cleared the ball. There were two occasions where Nottingham Forest players could have cleared the ball, and they didn't. So don't blame Paul Tierney. 1:52. After that whole incident, had they gone straight up the other end, like a few seconds and scored, I'd sort of probably understand that far more than I do at this moment in time.
Let's just explain the situation first of all to anyone who might have been on the moon for the last couple of days.
They literally would have had to have been.
In injury time, Ibrahima Konate, the Liverpool defender, went down with a suspected head injury. The game was stopped while Forest were in possession. And when the game is restarted again, referee Paul Tierney started it with a drop, but well, by basically giving the ball back to Liverpool.
That was a mistake, but Liverpool fans will tell you as well, which is, I didn't see this whole game, but he did the same thing in the first half, but gave the ball back to Nottingham Forest. So,
but two mistakes don't make one.
I'm not saying that, but
it was a mistake.
People don't mention that.
It was a mistake, okay?
Yep.
And 2 minutes later, or 1:52 later, following a Liverpool corner, Liverpool win the game with a flick header from Darling Darwin. But what consumed me about that incident was he makes the mistake in the heat of the game. It's in injury time. It's been a hectic game. Referees are allowed to make mistakes. What I don't understand is why there's not wriggle room, easy for me to say, wriggle room for two assistant referees, a fourth official and the VAR team to say in his ear, Paul, you've made a mistake. That should have been a Forest possession. Stop the game and go back. But they're not allowed to. Once the game has been restarted, like back in the early part of the season when Liverpool suffered that injustice at Tottenham with the Luis Diaz goal, once the mistake has been made and the game is restarted, they can't restart it, stop it and start it again. I think that is wrong. I think that's wrong. What's the point of having all this technology and the earpieces and all the help that referees get if when they make a clear error like that, someone can't say to them, stop the game, Paul, you've made a mistake, go back, it's a Forest ball. I don't see the problem.
I agree with you. It's not That wasn't subjective.
I don't
see
you're
spot on.
It's just a fact. It's a rule thing. Chris, you spent most of last week on the road in Scotland, in one of your fulfilling many of your other many obligations to the media. Brendan Rodgers, Celtic manager, has had an interesting week. A week ago, we were talking about the way that he's spoken to Jane Lewis, the BBC Scotland reporter. He's managed to move on from that one. But his team lost. Celtic lost at Hearts yesterday. Big opportunity missed because Rangers had lost the day before. But the thing that everybody's talking about in Scotland this morning is refereeing, because Brendan was critical of the VAR official.
Yeah, not the ref.
Yeah.
So I mean that sort of subtle difference, not the ref, the VAR official, John Beaton. And I know you know a fair bit about Scottish football, but there are these conspiracy theorists that Celtic and Rangers are always on the wrong end of certain decisions.
The debating point swirling around Scottish football this morning is about referees. Brendan's unhappy with John Beaton, the VAR official for the game in Edinburgh yesterday. And the issue is that there are theories, unproven, in Scotland that John Beaton is a Rangers fan. Now, he will not be the first or the last referee or assistant referee or VAR official to be accused of bias. And what I want to get into is this issue of, does it matter, even if he does support Rangers, and we don't know that he does, I don't know that he does it matter who referees support? A bit of background is that in England, before the start of every season, every official has to declare the team that they support. They also have to declare the team that their immediate family members support. And they are not allowed to take charge of any game that involves that team or one of their local rivals. So, for example, Michael Oliver, we know, is a Newcastle fan. He was in the away end recently, which we criticised him for when Newcastle won at Sunderland in the FA Cup. Well, Michael Oliver is a Newcastle fan, so he would not be allowed to referee a Newcastle match or a game involving Sunderland. He could ref, if Newcastle were going for the league title, he could referee a game that involves Arsenal or Liverpool or Manchester City or any team at the top, but not a local rival. That's the way it works in England. In Scotland, I'm led to believe, there is no such declaration needed. The referees don't have to tell.
What's your view on that?
My view on that is that I do not care. I think it's a load of old nonsense, right? Referees are professionals, right? They are trained to make decisions. They know if they consistently make poor decisions, they won't be top class referees anymore. It's not in their best interest to make decisions driven either by ineptitude, a lack of fitness, or bias, okay? So I don't care who referees support. They are grown men and women. It's a load of old nonsense. There was a big fuss before Liverpool played Man City at the Etihad this season because Chris Kavanagh was the referee. And a lot of Liverpool fans were saying, oh, he's from Manchester. He's not from Manchester. He's from Ashton-under-Lyne, which is in Greater Manchester, just like Wigan's in Greater Manchester or Bolton's in Greater Manchester. And it doesn't matter. He's not a City fan anyway. He'd made that declaration. I don't care about it.
So in your view, then, the poor decision making is just down to total incompetence.
It's down to being a human being, Chris. A human being. And one thing that VAR has taught us is that human beings, even when they've got all the time in the world to make decisions, will still get them wrong. It's part of the ebb and flow and the vicissitudes of sport. Just like sports, men and women make mistakes, so the officials make mistakes. And it's always going to happen. I don't care who they support, mate. They're not making bad decisions on purpose.
Okay.
You don't agree with me, do you?
I don't. Don't really know.
You don't, well,
I think it's interesting the difference, and I didn't know this, and I should have known this, between the England and Scotland protocol. that's...
Yeah, I actually put this out to our, to Stephen McGowan, our Scotland football correspondent, just before we came.
So we can blame him then?
On air to ask him. And he's confirmed to me that they don't ask that question of referees. And I think...
I think it's a really interesting one.
I think that the reason is because the vast majority would say either Celtic or Rangers. And that would mean you'd end up with no referees left.
So then... Can you understand then how supporters on both sides think at times then?
Well, football fans will see conspiracies everywhere, mate. Okay? Yeah. Yesterday on Twitter...
Don't shout at me.
Yesterday on Twitter, so before, or X, before the game, Erik ten Hag came out with a quote where he said something like... my players need to be hungry. I've told them to go and eat or something. It was a peculiar.
That would get me going.
It's great motivational lines. So I tweeted it. I just thought it was a good line. And then at half time, because they were winning,
they'd overeaten.
At half time, I tweeted, he told them to eat, and they are. And then at full time, I'm getting a load of City fans giving it. Ah, yeah, you're eating humble pie now, aren't you? Nothing to do with me. Yeah. I was just repeating what the manager said. But football fans will see conspiracy, they'll see bias, they'll see evil at work everywhere, right? I have a Liverpool fan who emails me every single week, sometimes twice a week, sometimes three times during the same game, right? He's a bright guy. Some of his emails are interesting and make me laugh, but he is convinced that the world is against Liverpool. Bias, bias, bias. He is convinced that there is a designated, well-thought-out plot in English football to undermine Liverpool Football Club. It's nonsense, but he thinks it. And that's what a lot of football fans are like that. So, of course, they think the refs are biased. Doesn't mean they are. Right, the end of it. Before we finish, we mentioned before Bohemian Green, who'd told us that he was listening from Prague. He also left a message on Spotify to say, well, how predictable that it took Brendan Rodgers saying good girl to Jane Lewis for the Scottish game to get a mention on this podcast.
That's very unfair. Is that libelous? Can I say that?
It's just wrong. Just unfair.
Can we libel Bohemian Green?
We've sat here several times slagging off Michael Beale.
You have.
Who's a lad at Rangers? Who's played at Norwich? Your mate,
Todd Cantwell. Todd. But he's doing all right now. He's injured, but he's.
We had a furious row a couple of months ago when I described Scottish football as a wasteland of poverty and mediocrity or something like that. So we do talk about Scottish football, right? Moments of the week. You first.
They don't always have to be good moments. And my moment of the week, you mentioned I'd been up in Scotland for the last week. Quite a bad moment. And I don't know how you feel about this, but I was travelling up to Dingwall.
Ross County.
Where you from Glasgow, where you go up the A9, beautiful road. And I'd had a couple of cups of coffee in the morning. I mean, I'm 50 now. I don't mind admitting that to you. I know you think I'm a lot younger. And I needed... to go to the toilet, and we are driving up the A9. There's a place called Dunkeld on the right-hand side. We pull in, and it's a beautiful place, Dunkeld. You drive down the high street, and you see these big mountains in front of you. And I was thinking, this is wonderful. It's like Salzburg. And anyway, but I was bursting. I desperately needed a pee. And so my friend and the guy who was driving, a guy called Martin, pulls into this hotel. I'm bursting. I get out of the car. I run into the reception because I'm, holding it in. And I ask the lady behind reception, can I use the toilet? And she says, yes, you can, but that'll be 50p. I said, you what?
Spend a penny.
She said, that'll be 50p. I said, I don't have any change. I mean, who carries change?
Contactless.
And she held up this little charity box. And I said, you are. I said, I'm really desperate. You are joking, aren't you? And she said, no.
Honestly, I said,
I'm bursting. And she wouldn't let me. So I had to go out, got my friend Martin, drive down the road, and I went in a bush.
Which is illegal.
Where are you supposed to go when you get to my age?
It's illegal. I'm not saying you made a mistake. Firstly, you should have weed in the cup. When she held the cup up, she had a weed in it.
She's
obviously a Rangers fan. Clearly a Rangers fan.
I, I was sweating.
But maybe that is why. Maybe that is why.
Who does that?
Maybe
that's illegal.
Maybe that is why.
There should be. I tell you what. All the law changes. That's a law we should change. You can't charge someone who wants a pee. That's ageism.
Spend a penny. Right. I did have two, but I'm going to just go and do one of them. It's a bit niche, this one. But did you spot, you're a big Ange, a big fan of big Ange Postecoglou. Did you see the Spurs throw-in? Or not?
I saw that he won the award for Manager of the Year, didn't he, in London, which he thoroughly deserved.
The Spurs throw-in for their second goal, it was clearly a kind of a training ground thing. Kulusevski goes to take the ball, to take the throw-in. He even goes so far as to lift it over his head as if to take it. But in the last minute, doesn't, tosses it to Emerson. He takes the throw-in to Maddison. Kulusevski runs off in the opposite direction. Crystal Palace defenders are completely bamboozled by all these bodies running in different areas. Maddison gets a free cross and the lad heads it in. Romero heads it in.
Yep.
You know, super, clever. Yep. Well, you and I take the piss out of the minutiae of modern football sometimes, but that is really, really clever. I mean, they won't get away with it again, but the one time they tried it worked. So fair play, a bit of cleverness. Right, okay, that's it. Thanks for being with us, everybody. Remember, whether you're listening on Spotify or Apple Podcasts, please remember to subscribe and leave some comments. Go to our social platforms on X, Instagram, TikTok, Mail Sports, the search, you want to go in there. Leave us some thoughts and some comments. We'll be back on Thursday for the weekend preview show, and we'll be back here in these seats next week for the next edition of It's All Kicking Off. I'm Ian Laidman, and the guy with his legs crossed to my left.
I'm off for a pee. I need another one.
It's Chris Sutton. This has been It's All Kicking Off.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market. Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.